Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Starting tomorrow, more than 800,000 low-income and disabled patients enrolled in the state's Medicaid program will be moved to new insurance plans, so-called accountable care organizations. It's part of the biggest redesign of the MassHealth program in more than two decades. John McDonough is a professor of public health at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. He's also former director of the group Healthcare for All, and he joins us to explain the changes. Thanks for joining us, John.
Great to be here with you. Thank you.
First of all, I mean, this major shift for 800,000 people has to do with these things called accountable care organizations. All these folks are going to be asked to join one of, 17 ACOs. What exactly is an ACO and how do they work?
An ACO, or an accountable care organization, is an innovation that was put forward as part of the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, in 2010. And it is groups of healthcare providers, hospitals, physicians, nursing homes, whatever, who come together and form their own healthcare provider network to take responsibility for a given group of patients over the course of usually a whole year. And they are, depending how the rules are written, financially at risk, either a little or a lot, for managing care within a budget.
So to put it in a nutshell, an ACO is essentially where, as you were saying, a network of providers and hospitals coordinate with each other, and they're incentivized to keep people healthy, to keep their patients healthy, versus just rather standard fee for service, as most medical care is done.
Right. This is part of a big national movement that was strongly pushed by the Obama administration to move from a system based upon fee for service, where providers are just paid for every individual act that they do, and the incentive is just to do more and more of that, and instead moving away from fee-for-service and moving toward what's generally called fee-for-value, where providers are paid not for how much they do, but for how well they take care of you. The hope is that by taking better care of people in a more coordinated and holistic way, including things like mental health and substance abuse and long-term services and supports, putting all of that together will not only provide better care, the hope is that it will also save money.
Well, so to that point, Medicaid accounts for 40% of the state's budget now, and our state's overall budget is $40 billion. So, I mean, do we have a sense as to how much money this might save?
And this whole ACO experiment, the federal government is in this quite deeply. And so the state has committed that for every year of this five-year demonstration, the state will produce savings of about 2.8% per year relative to how costs would have gone up without this intervention. So this is a big financial gamble on the part of the state that this new effort will in fact achieve substantial savings to the state and to the federal government. The track record with ACOs around the country is that they tend to improve quality and they don't really save any money. So the state is putting itself and the provider community on the hook for significant savings as well as significant improvements in quality.
Okay, so let me ask you then, though, who's going to make sure that doctors, the provider community, as you said, don't withhold care in order to save money?
So the provider groups, the 17 ACOs, will be measured based on their finances and their cost of care, and they will also be measured on a pretty hefty set of quality measures as well. So if they are skimping on care in a way that is measurable and noticeable, then those ACOs will be penalized financially as well.
Right. Now, if I understand correctly, though, this new model, medical staff are given quite a bit of freedom to spend the money as they see fit in order to help a patient. Are there concerns that we may see a stretching of the boundaries of what's considered to be health care?
Well, that's a tension, And I think the freedom that providers get at the end of the day as we get to the precipice of the launch is far less than what people were talking about in the earlier days of this experiment. So the notion was that, you know, if providers decided, for example, that the biggest risk to your health was that you didn't have adequate housing, that they could actually use some of the money to pay to give you better housing. All of those grand ambitions have kind of been pushed by the side. You can still do use some of the money to pay emergency rent for somebody, but only somebody who's got facing a serious illness where this is a critical need, and this is stands out in terms of the immediacy of the benefit of doing this. And we will have to wait and see how this works out.
Now, again, from the patient perspective, what would you say to folks who may be worried that are they going to see a reduction in their benefits?
There's no reduction in benefits. The main piece is that if you've been going to, for example, the East Boston Neighborhood Health Center for your primary care, if that's your medical home, as we tend to call it these days, you still go there. So wherever your primary care doctor has been, your main point of contact with the healthcare system, you will stay connected to that place.
Yeah. You know, just one more question about Medicaid from the federal government's point of view here. I mean, we have been in the middle of lots of talk from the Trump administration, from Congress about, you know, the desire to make significant changes to Medicaid. I mean, could the state be in the middle of a huge change here that might get upended or overruled from Washington?
Well, you know, that's a fascinating part of all of this. This whole program that is being implemented now, you know, the federal government, and it's the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, plays music and then expects the states to dance to the music that they play. And so this whole structure was created dancing to the songs that were being played by the Obama administration. Now we have the Trump administration in. This contract for this new system in MassHealth was agreed to, was literally signed the Friday before the November 6th, 2016 election.
Wow.
And it's a five-year deal, importantly, so it outlives the first term of the Trump administration. But you're absolutely right. And so Massachusetts is continuing to dance to the Obama tune, while the Trump tune, let's put work requirements on people to stay in Medicaid, let's create lifetime annual limits for how long you can be on the program. All those kinds of things are now being advanced by the Trump administration, and Massachusetts is continuing to play to the Obama administration. If they can hold this together, then it lasts beyond into 2021, when we may have a whole different set of music that's being played.
Well, we'll put a bunch of links on our website, radioboston.org. Again, since more than 800,000 people are going to go through this transition, we'll put as much helpful information as we can on our website. John McDonough, a professor of public health at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health and former director of Healthcare for All, thank you so much for walking us through all of this.
My pleasure. Good luck. Thank you.